The HD Movie Podcast may contain mature content, strong language, and spoilers. Hello and welcome to episode 130 of the HD Movie Podcast. I'm Darren Gaskell.
And I'm Hayley Alice Roberts.
And in this episode, it's taken us quite a long time to get back round to this topic. The last time we covered this was way back in episode 80. So 50 episodes later, we are now going to return to the Mandela Effect. Yes, we're back to discuss some more of that interesting phenomenon known as the Mandela Effect. Will we be picking up on where Kazam has got to? Well, you'll just have to wait around to see if we do. But there's quite a few ones that we're going to discuss, and there's some quite interesting ones in there as well, which we haven't covered before, and thought you might actually want to hear about. There's some quite intriguing stuff coming up.
And for those who are unfamiliar with Mandela Effect or haven't listened to episode 80 yet, here is a quick definition of what it is. And this is from Medical News Today. I've literally just Googled Mandela Effect to retrieve this definition. The Mandela Effect is when a group of people misremembers a historical event or person. Writer and researcher Fiona Broom coined the term over a decade ago when she created a website detailing her recollections of former South African President Nelson Mandela dying in prison in the 1980s. So, of course, it's a Mandela effect because it's named after Nelson Mandela, who actually died in 2013. But some people remember that he passed in the 1980s, which is false. And this is basically a phenomenon that has created false memories where a collective group of people remember something that didn't actually happen. It's very, very fascinating. There's a lot of psychology behind it that I don't think we're fully equipped to get into. But one subject of the Mandela Effect that we do find super interesting is related to movies. So we are going to break down for you five movie Mandela effects in this episode, ones that we haven't covered before. So we're excited to get into it.
Okay, what's first up?
So first up, it's to do with the 1990 movie Home Alone, Christmas classic to many, and it's to do with a missing line. So I have to confess, when I saw this Mandela effect at Christmas time 2023, so only a few months ago, I really had to second guess, and I'm still not too sure about this one, if I'm misremembering it or if this is actually something spooky going on. Basically, it relates to the line, "It gives me the creeps," in the scene where the burglars are following Kevin and he goes to hide in the church. So when I was researching on Reddit, I came across this post from 4 years ago. So this isn't really a new one, but it is new to me. This post was 4 years ago and it's titled, "Any fans of Home Alone here? Do you remember this line or am I losing it? I've watched Home Alone pretty much every single year around Christmas time for almost 30 years now. I'm sure I'm not alone in loving the movie as one of the best Christmas films ever made. I know the film like the back of my hand. I could recite every line before it's been spoken. I have the film ingrained in my mind. I know a bunch of extraneous trivia about the film. Tonight I decided to open a new Blu-ray. The past decade or so of me watching it has been a digital rip. Anyways, there's this scene around 40 minutes into the movie where Kevin is almost hit by Marv and Harry as they're driving their van out to the street from a neighbour's driveway after robbing their house. They almost hit Kevin. The robbers exchange some words with him. Kevin sees Harry's gold tooth and gets spooked, and he begins running away from him once he realises they are following him. He runs to a church and hides behind himself in a nativity scene. As the robbers drive up to the church, they have the following dialogue that I seem to be remembering differently. Marv, maybe he went in the church. Harry, I'm not going in there. Marv, me neither. Harry, let's get out of here. I could have sworn that Marv, in his second line of dialogue, said, me neither, that place gives me the creeps. I remember thinking how it was weird that they seemed so freaked out about going into the church. Okay, so interestingly, this one is saying they think that Marv said the line, but in other posts, it's Harry who says the line, and that's what I can hear in my head is Joe Pesci's voice saying it gives me the creeps. To me, I was pretty sure it was there, and it does seem weird in hindsight that it's not, but I think this could be potentially mixed up with another line at a different point in the film, or maybe even in the sequel. But the post then that brought this up again 3 months ago at Christmas time just said, I can't be the only one who remembers seeing where Harry and Marv followed Kevin to the church in the truck. One of them saying, that place gives me the creeps. That line isn't in the movie anymore, and I just noticed today. So some posters respond to this saying that they think Disney Plus has cut out the line, because obviously that is the main place that you can stream Home Alone. And it is aired on TV channels like Channel 4, etc., over the Christmas holidays. Home Alone is probably not a movie I really sit down and pay too much attention to, so I would basically have it on in the background. So I just don't know well enough if this is a genuine Mandela effect or if I'm just second guessing myself based on reading these posts and thinking I can hear that line in my head. It's very interesting. There's no past clips that you can find on YouTube that we've checked that have the line. There's somebody who has edited the line in themselves, that doesn't count. So there's no actual real proof of this without going back and watching a VHS from the time the movie was released, or a VHS where it's like being recorded off the TV. So I don't know. This one has really stumped me, and I'm trying to be rational about it, but it did give me goosebumps when I first came across this one back at Christmas.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the copy on Disney Plus, and the lines go, as you said them, without the this place gives me the creeps line. I don't have an old copy of Home Alone. I think this one is possibly misremembering it from maybe another movie in the Home Alone series, maybe something else that either Daniel Stern or Joe Pesci were in. The thing is that the line, it gives me the creeps, is so on the nose about a whole load of movies that you could use it in. Anything with a kind of a spooky place, or any movie where there's something that you don't really want to go into, then the line, it gives me the creeps, is probably the sort of line that's going to be used over and over and over again in movies. And I guess it's quite an easy line to remember somebody saying, because they clearly don't want to go into the church because they're burglars. It's not a place that criminals would want to go into anyway. And the fact that it does give them the creeps, it's implied anyway. So I think that although it's a line that could quite easily fit into that scene, I think that it's unnecessary in the way the dialogue flows. The thing is that there's quite a long pause between bits of the dialogue, and I guess some people might think that they've overdubbed the line with silence because they sit there for a reasonably long time before they decide to drive away. And as you said, somebody has dubbed the line in where he thought it used to be. So there is a YouTube video where he has kind of dubbed where he thought the line occurred in the scene. And there's enough space between the dialogue that that line will fit. But at the time that they're looking at the church, it's a pause while they're both trying to work out what to do. And then it's kind of, yeah, me neither, let's not do that. And then they drive away. So I don't think this is as outrageous as some Mandela effects. It's more plausible than most. The fact that it doesn't seem to be in existence seems a little odd, because Home Alone isn't the sort of movie where you just hack loads and loads of content out of it, because there's nothing particularly harmful, there's nothing particularly offensive about it. Certainly that line of dialogue, it's what, 3 seconds of dialogue? You could have just left it in and nobody would have known any different. But I can understand why, because it fits with the general atmosphere of the scene. And even if it's not in existence, and even if the old copies don't have that line in, I'm less critical of this one because of the way that it could fit quite easily. But as I said before, the line, "It gives me the creeps," you could put it in any horror movie, pretty much any setting that is quite uncomfortable. So I think that it probably doesn't exist, but somebody out there with an old VHS of Home Alone can probably confirm or deny it.
Absolutely. So again, let us know if you've heard this line or misremembered this line. We'd love to know if this mandala has got you or if you're completely immune to it.
For the next one, the name's Bond, James Bond, or rather, the name's Effect, Mandela Effect.
That's a good one. I'm genuinely laughing there. Yeah, this is quite a famous mandala effect, and this one has messed with quite a few people's minds. If you're a Bond fan and are well versed in the franchise, we are going to be looking at the Roger Moore starring Moonraker from 1979. This one features a character named Dolly. She is blonde with pigtails, and there is a scene where she meets the villain of the film, Jaws. And of course, Jaws has got a metal mouth because, that's his namesake. And in the scene, Dolly smiles at him. Now, some people, well, quite a lot of people, are utterly convinced and will die on the hill that Dolly has braces. But if you watch the movie now, or if you search for any clips of this scene, Dolly never had braces. She is just braceless. She just has her normal teeth in her mouth. There's nothing else there. This one is quite interesting because I think this is kind of in league with something like Shazam because people on the internet are absolutely adamant that this character had braces, and in their minds, it's just nonsensical. Why wouldn't she? Like the whole thing, because she would match up with the villain who's like the love interest to her character. So this is quite a freaky one. What do you think, Darren?
I think, again, this is plausible, but I don't think it's correct because there's a lot of stuff in this scene which takes your attention away from the character of Dolly Smiley. And there is a very good YouTube video about this. It's only 5 minutes long and it is from Collative Learning, where somebody goes through that particular sequence and goes through all the distractions and all the ways that the sequence is filmed and how the perception doesn't quite match the reality. Yes, I can see why that they would have her wearing braces, but interestingly, the scene is shot where Jaws is in direct sunlight, Dolly is not, the sun is behind her, so you don't really get to see her teeth all that well because the source of light is basically at the back of her. Now, Jaws smiles in a certain way, and then she smiles in almost the same way. So it's more to do with mirroring how they smile at each other rather than what's in their mouth. It's an interesting one. The character of Dolly is almost a mirror of Jaws in the way that she's smiling, but there's also a very different take on each character because she's very pure and innocent. Even though she is part of the bad guy's plan, she's just sort of on the periphery of everything. Whereas he is, at that point in the movie, the biggest menace to everybody. But the way that they've shot it, there's lots and lots of other distractions, basically without going into too much detail because the video is very good. It's only 5 minutes, so you want to watch this video. But there are three things that are distracting you before you get to see her teeth. Psychology tells us to look in somebody's eyes first. So the first thing that you see is her eyes. And then there is a distraction where she's got her neck exposed. So that's another distraction. And then, sorry to drag this down into the gutter, but it's here. She's got a very impressive cleavage as well. So what you've got to say is eyes, neck, cleavage. And the shot of her smiling is maybe only a second and a half, possibly 2 seconds. So while you're distracted by all of this stuff in the foreground, you don't get to see her teeth for any length of time. So by the time you've concentrated on the teeth, the shot has gone back to jaws. The shot goes back to jaws, he's still got a mouthful of metal. So your mind may actually say, okay, I saw braces as well. So it's making a connection that's probably not there. It's an understandable connection because that's the sort of thing that you think might be how they get together. That's what bonds them, because they've both got augmentations to their mouth. But the more plausible explanation is that the way they've shot it, because generally jaws will smile at people and then they'll run for the hills, basically. That's the character's MO over the Roger Moore Bond series. But this is the point where Jaws actually finds somebody who isn't scared of him and smiles back. And smiles back in almost the same way that Jaws smiles at people. So, again, this one, I can completely understand why people thought she had braces. Now, I'm a reasonably big Bond fan, but I'm not a big fan of the Roger Moore movies, per se. And I don't really like Moonraker as a Bond movie. I think it's a bit silly. So, unfortunately, I haven't seen Moonraker a lot. However, from thinking back to when I first saw Moonraker, which was probably on dusty old VHS somewhere, I never remembered Dolly having braces. The more pressing matter for me was, did she wear specs? And that was my thing. I mean, the braces thing was never a problem. I thought, no, she definitely didn't have braces, but I can't remember whether or not she wore specs. And then I thought, well, kind of the opposite of Jaws. It's like, well, I remember she had pigtails. I remember she was really small in terms of stature, whereas Jaws was like 7 feet tall. Yeah, I think she probably did have specs. Now she does have specs. That's another distraction as well, because she wears metallic rimmed specs. So that could be another tell for people to think, oh yeah, they've got the idea of something metallic on her face somewhere. It's the metallic rims on her glasses as well, which is quite an interesting one.
Definitely. I'm going to check out that video, but yeah, that was very well explained. So I find that completely fascinating. And when you break it down like that, you can view the Mandela effect in a more logical way. And I think we've both described her as having pigtails. Is it plaits she has,
it's
or pigtails?
I think it's plaits, well, isn't it? Yeah, it's plaits. It's plaits. It's kind of, it's the same. Yeah, it's
pigtail
well,
plaits.
Well, it's kind of a combo because she's got plaits, but they're kind of done at the bottom, almost in pigtails.
Yeah.
As well.
So what do you call them?
Yeah. So it's a weird combo. Yeah, I think this is a good one because I don't think it's somebody just taking a bit of Moonraker and just trying to exploit it for saying like, I remember it like this when it clearly isn't. I think there's lots and lots of logical reasons why this has made people think that she wore braces. And I don't think there's anything particularly wrong with this effect. I think if you go back and see it, the slight qualm I have is that people will go back and see the sequence and then see she hasn't got braces and then they'll say, oh, it's been altered in later versions, which... Again, Moonraker, it's a Bond movie. Why would they go back and alter it? There's no point.
What would be the point of like such minute detail as well? If it was part of her character, you'd keep it in there. Nobody is going to go through a movie from over 40 years ago and be like, right, what we need to do to improve is, oh, remove this character's braces. Just to screw with the audience's mind. I mean, I don't think things work like that. But obviously there are some people that do take irrational stances with the Mandela effect, so nothing surprises me. I mean, we did talk about Shazam a couple of years ago now, and people were saying that the government went into people's houses and wiped the VHS tapes. Like, things like that don't happen.
No, they certainly don't. Certainly not to Bond movies, because they're so ingrained in public consciousness, certainly in the UK, that there's no reason to tamper with any of them. And I know some of them have slightly dodgy views on certain bits of society, but they're left as they are. And if the Bond movies with the dodgy content are still there, and they're still there, definitely, some of the stuff now, if you look at it with 2024 eyes, even if you realise that the Bond movies are a bit of fun and they're hyper real, but some of the stuff in there is still a little bit uncomfortable. However, if all of that stuff still exists in a Bond movie, why are they going to take one little bit of one scene and then say, right, we've got to digitally remove the braces from the character of Dolly? And also, what's interesting is Dolly doesn't just show up in that scene. She's in a couple of other scenes. And when you see her later in the movie, there's a much longer shot of her in the space station, and she does smile then. No braces.
And it is interesting that they fixated on that one particular scene. As you say, if there's a longer sequence with her, and it is literally what you said about they're focusing on Jaws and what he's got, you know, and then people are just really making a mountain out of a molehill to a point. They're just building on something. And it is, as you say, it's those, like, those visual cues that people focus on is really fascinating. And it is obviously just stemmed from that. I suppose when, you know, a movie's old and maybe you haven't watched it for a long time or don't have access to it as frequently, you know, it's not something that's going to be played in the cinema. It's not something that, unless you've gone out of your way to buy a copy, some people might have just seen it back in the day and then decided to rewatch it or come across the Mandela effect and it's just messed with their heads.
The actress Blanche Ravalek has gone on record saying she didn't wear braces for the movie. But weirdly enough, when she went on record to say she didn't wear braces in the movie, immediately somebody came back and said, oh, she was probably misremembering it.
Yeah, it's always that, or they're being paid off to stay silent about it. People just over-exaggerate things. And sometimes I think people want to believe in it and want it to be true so badly that they're just convinced that this is how... I mean, it's hard to say because anyone can write anything on the internet, but quite a few of these posts I've read are quite compelling, how people put their argument across for it. So
yeah, absolutely. And there's nothing wrong with this particular one. It's a very harmless bit of Mandela effect. And I don't think there's huge amounts of hostility on either side about this one. But I've seen the clips, I've heard the explanation, and I don't think this actually flies. Dolly does not have braces. Okay, it's time for our third one. What do we have coming up for Mandela Effect number 3?
So this one relates to the 1996 film Fear, and I have titled this subheading as It's Always Been Reese, or Has It? So Fear is actually one of my favourite thriller teen movies of all time. I recently revisited it, actually. Reese Witherspoon is one of my favourite actresses, so I'm quite well versed in her filmography, and I've seen many, many of her films over the years, her earlier ones like this, and obviously later ones too, and a lot of her TV work. So she's somebody that I'm always kind of interested in what she does. So this one struck me as really bizarre, but again, quite interesting in how the psychology of the Mandela effect works. So we will get into it. So I found this post on Reddit and I was taken aback. It basically says, I know that this has been posted in the past, but I'm just wondering if anyone else has recently seen Fear 1996 and had a change of main actress. So before I get into that, Fear is a movie starring Reese Witherspoon and Mark Wahlberg. It is a psycho thriller. It is basically the bunny boiler subgenre as part of that, but the roles are reversed where it is a male psycho boyfriend. It's reminiscent of Straw Dogs as well. It's like an updated version of Straw Dogs when you get to the climax of the film. This person does say on Reddit, a few years ago, there was a post about this, so I know I'm not the first to notice, but it's recently came about to me because it's on Netflix. The main thumbnail is of Reese Witherspoon. Looks wrong to me. I remember it being Alicia Silverstone. I remember the movie poster. I went through IMDb to see if maybe I was thinking about a different movie. It was definitely her in that film because I saw all her movies at the time. I really liked her as an actress. After that movie, it really changed my view of her because there is a sensitive scene I didn't expect to see of her. It's an R movie. Anyways, I just wanted to see if anyone else had experienced this recently. Quite a lot of people come back to this person, say it's always been Reese Witherspoon. Maybe you're thinking of the film The Crush with Alicia Silverstone. So obviously, both actresses are around the same age. They both have long blonde hair. They both starred in similar genre of movies. Alicia Silverstone did act in a lot of thrillers at the time. And The Crush obviously comes to mind, which was 3 years earlier. And there was also a film called The Babysitter, which might have a similar looking cover as well. I also think with this movie, when I first came across the film Fear and I did see the poster, it wasn't necessarily obvious to me that it was Reese Witherspoon. And I say this just because it is the two main characters shrouded in darkness. You've got Mark Wahlberg and he's hugging this girl, so you just see the side of her face. And it's not obvious that it's Reese, if that makes sense, just by the way the image looks. If you go and have a look at it, you'll hopefully understand what I'm trying to say with that. But when you watch the movie, 100%, it's Reese Witherspoon. You cannot get that confused. So I can understand if someone had seen a cover and just presumed it was Alyssa Silverstone, that's fine. But it's very strange that people have really confused the two after watching the movie, and the way they think they've seen this movie with Alyssa Silverstone in that role, and then they've come to it like 20 years later and they think the actress has changed. That is just bizarre. You cannot digitally remove a person from an existing film and put another person in there and get them interacting with the existing actors that have already filmed their scenes 20 years ago. It does not make any sense. You'd have to shoot the movie twice with the two different actresses for a start. There's just no way that this is realistic by any means. I can understand, as I say, you getting actresses confused. As I say, they were very similar in appearance and performed in very similar movies. The person referring to the uncomfortable scene, so spoilers for Fear, there is a scene on a roller coaster. It's a sexual scene. I won't go into it. I won't go into detail or describe it, but I know that Alyssa Silverstone was very young when she got into the industry, and I know that she was made to do uncomfortable scenes in certain films like The Crush, so I can understand again where the comparison comes from. But for people to genuinely believe that they've changed the actress and it's been changed on Netflix is just mind-boggling, because that just would not happen. So I don't know where the logic in this is. Like, people might be unaccepting that they're wrong, but to actually think that, again, it's that whole thing about the government going in and stealing the VHS copies. It's basically along those lines, isn't it? So what do you think of this one?
Yeah, I think this is a complete confusion over what movie Alicia Silverstone was in. The Babysitter, I can see why there might be some confusion there because there's an element of fantasy and obsession about the babysitter because Alicia Silverstone is the babysitter in the movie, and there are characters in this movie who obsess about her and fantasize about her and pursue her to a certain extent. So I can see why whoever it is thought that she'd be in a movie of this type, but it's not Fear. And weirdly, The Crush, if they were getting it confused with The Crush, she's on the other side of the fence in The Crush because she's the one who is obsessing over somebody else. So she's more in line with the Mark Wahlberg character. So I don't really get this one. I mean, I haven't seen Fear for quite a while, but even then, when we were discussing this before we set the episode up, I was like, well, it's never been Alicia Silverstone. I do remember Fear, and I do remember it being Reese Witherspoon. I don't know where the confusion is on this one. It seems a bit of an odd one. Unless somebody is so fixated on Alicia Silverstone that every time some blonde lass turns up in a movie, it's Alicia Silverstone. Not to cast any shade on Alicia Silverstone's performances, because as we've said recently, she's a really good actress, certainly in things like The Lodge. She's great in that. So we're not casting any aspersions on Alicia Silverstone's talent, but even so, Fear, it's Reese Witherspoon. It's always been Reese Witherspoon. I don't get how you would confuse something like Fear, even with The Babysitter, because the plots are quite different as well, and the approach is quite different. And the way that things play out is quite different as well. So I don't really get where this one comes from. It's a movie that's been kicking around for quite a long time. And yes, I understand the poster. The poster is quite an effective poster, but you can't really tell who it is. And as you say, they're both in shadow. So I guess you can see that poster and think, is that Reese Witherspoon? I'm not quite sure. But even so, if you come to watch the movie, you can't go through Fear and then think, oh, I seem to remember Alicia Silverstone being in this. No, I don't think so with this one. This just seems to be somebody who's got it quite badly wrong.
Yeah, and for this to have come up 2 years ago and again now is quite interesting. I honestly think it's people being confused by the poster and they've just had it in their head that, oh yeah, that was the Alyssa Silverstone film, and then they come to watch it and realise it's not. So I think it's a harmless mistake.
Yeah.
But this is an interesting one on the post from 2 years ago where someone brought it up. This other person said, I do remember Reese in the movie Fear, but I do have a Reese story in relation to American Psycho. When I saw the movie for the second time, roughly 2003 or 4, I was completely shocked to see her in the part of Evelyn. In my mind, I remembered Evelyn as just some random Hollywood blonde, a vapid and minor character, no one special or noteworthy, and certainly not the young girl we all just watched in Cruel Intentions. However, when I looked further into it, I was also shocked to realise American Psycho came out in the year 2000. For some reason, I thought it was at least 5 years older than that. I pondered this for a while. The whole thing threw me, but in hindsight, I probably thought the movie came out in the mid-90s because the plot was set in the late 80s. Now I can't possibly imagine anyone else in that part, but at the time, I thought I was going crazy. At the time, I was sure Reese was way too young to be able to be in that movie. So then that's really interesting as well, how people misremember movies coming out in different eras. And it's just funny, if you've not really looked into something, I mean, as a child, like I'd watch films, but I'd have no concept of what year they came out in. So I do remember, for example, being really surprised at how old Home Alone was when I watched it, because I was born in tail end of 89. So the movie came out in 90. I would never have watched it or had any recollection of it then because I was a baby. But I would have watched it sort of around the 1997, 98 mark. So when I'd like seen in the TV guide it was a 1990 movie, I thought, oh, I thought it was a new film. So it's just quite interesting how your mind can work with that. That's definitely quite a fascinating one. Everyone's got different perceptions, and sometimes if I'm having conversations with people and I know they've made an error in talking about a film, and it's like sometimes I feel, oh, should I let them know that's not correct? I don't know if I'm overstepping the mark. I don't want to seem like that really annoying film buff who's just coming in there, swooping in and shattering their dreams. I'll leave that to Darren. He's good
Yeah,
at
I'll go
that.
in and just stamp all over them in terms of factual knowledge. No, that's not true, but I think it depends how wrong they are. Because if they're going to keep going and repeating this fact, part of me thinks I need to correct them because I can't have them just keep going out and saying this to people because everybody else will be thinking that's not right. You know, they may not tell them either. So I think in some cases it's public service, but if it's obscure knowledge, I would just kind of leave it there. But if it's something that's glaringly obvious, I'd think I've got to tell them that this is wrong. But in terms of release dates, I think that's something that's quite easy to get wrong, especially when it's something that is a movie that's set in a different era, like American Psycho, because it's all about yuppies and it's all about excess and it's all about the effect of big business in the 80s and the people that were just generally really awful. Now, if you've got a movie that's set in the 80s, then you're going to think, well, you know, are they looking back on this, like, say, maybe 10 years later? And it's quite easy to look back on American Psycho and think it was made in the mid 90s because it's all period detail from the 80s. So for somebody to say American Psycho, I thought it was made mid 90s, yeah, that's fine. I mean, it wasn't, but it could have been because everything is looking backwards. So that sort of mistake, it's an easy one to make. And as you get more and more movies and as you watch more and more stuff, the one thing that you're not going to remember, unless you're a complete movie geek, is the year things came out. Having said that, when you asked me about which year Moonraker came out, I actually did get it spot on, which just shows how bloody sad I am.
Yeah, some things just stick though, don't they? It's like if you've got a particular connection to something, and it's always worth having when you're doing a pub quiz. So it's sometimes useful knowledge to have. But as I say, this one again, it's just so fascinating how people are adamant that the actress has actually changed from the movie, physically changed. Like that is something that can happen. What would be the logic? These things cost time and money, so why would film producers going, oh, we need to physically remove Reese Witherspoon out of this film and put Alyssa Silverstone in it and de-age her to what she looked like in 1996. But well, actually, Fear was filmed in 94. See, I have, again, this random knowledge. of things that is probably embarrassing that I know this, but no, it was actually filmed in 1994 and then released in 1996. So, as we say, it's just that era, and it was just there were so many movies like that floating about at the time, and I love that subgenre. So, I have watched quite a substantial amount of these thriller type films, and I enjoy them. It's just easy to mix things up. And also, I remember one of the more crazy ones that I read was that somebody was adamant that a film couldn't have come out in the year 2000 because they recall watching it with their mum, and their mum passed away before 2000. And I think the film was What Women Want with Mel Gibson and Helen Hunt. I think I remember reading that one, and that was really fascinating. Like, how does that even work?
Yeah, the mind plays very strange tricks on people. That is a very weird one where you think, I remember seeing this movie and it can't have been this year because I saw it with somebody who is now no longer with us and died in a time frame that would have made it impossible to see that movie in that year. That is a really interesting effect of how the mind plays tricks on you, because there's certainly, in terms of What Women Want, a lot of information about when the movie came out. And it's all over IMDb, and there'll be production notes on this for it to come out earlier than it did. Well, either we've had a temporal reset somewhere, or it's just a very strange misremembering of it. But I guess if any kind of traumatic event, like, say, the death of a parent, it's a traumatic event. And I guess everything gets scrambled around that time. So everything has its own different meaning, and part of that is possibly you misremember events and sequences and times and dates and years. So I think it's quite possible for you to swear blind that you've seen something with somebody who passed away and then say, well, it must have come out previous to that because they would have been dead otherwise. It's an odd one, it's an interesting one as well. So, but I think anything that's gonna be that sort of earth-shattering in terms of an event in your life, everything else is just gonna spiral around it. And you're gonna misremember loads of stuff in terms of that, because nobody's gonna be in the right mind. It's just gonna scramble your brain. I can get why people would say that in terms of this movie had to have come out earlier, because if I hadn't watched it with a parent before they died. It's a weird one, but I completely understand it.
Yeah, definitely. And I think we all have these really strong memories about certain films. We remember where we were, who we were with. Some people just have that really strong memory because obviously it was a meaningful time. I mean, it might not even be that they absolutely love the movie. It's just like, oh, I went to see that film and it was awful, but I saw it with so and so. It's just we all have these strong recollections. And potentially, as I say, with that one, the person who'd written that post, they might have seen a separate Mel Gibson film with their mother and just got it mixed up as well. Again, really fascinating stuff.
At this point in the podcast, we have to extend our sincerest condolences to the friends and relatives and colleagues of Rowan Atkinson, RIP Rowan, except Rowan Atkinson is very much alive. However, the Mandela effect around Rowan Atkinson suggests that he's very much dead.
Yeah, this one was a bit of an insane one, I have to admit. I read this post, sent it straight to Darren because I knew what he would say. And yeah, it really confused me because obviously in my head, Rowan Atkinson is very much alive and well. He's still doing projects from what we know of. He's about, we see him about, not physically in our real lives, but you know what I mean? He will come up in the media. So this post was recent on Reddit and it says, "Does anyone remember Mr. Bean Rowan Atkinson dying? I was recently watching a video from my class and it had to do with Mr. Bean episodes, and I was talking to my teacher about how he died of cancer and how he hid it from people, but my teacher looks it up and he's alive. I clearly remember watching TV with my dad and some celebrities came on, even Miley Cyrus talking about him and how he was a good man. I swear I remember him dying sometime in 2023. Please, does anyone else remember this? I swear he died age 60. Some people then respond to that and say that they're probably confusing Rowan Atkinson with Paul Rubens. who played Pee Wee Herman, and because he died of cancer when he was 70, that's what people have responded. And I suppose Pee Wee Herman could be maybe a loose American equivalent of Mr. Bean. I'm not as familiar with that stuff, and there's stuff about it that I wouldn't want to get into Paul Rubens, but that's what people seem to think. Maybe the person heard of the death of Paul Rubens and just mixed it up. But they're adamant they don't know who Paul Rubens is, and I guess not a lot of people in the UK would as much as in America, because I don't think Pee Wee Herman was as popular over here. I don't really recall it. I've only ever come across it because of channels like Nostalgia Critic many years later. That's the only reason that it's in my consciousness, because that's how I've heard of it. I never recall it from my own childhood. People have responded as well, saying there is a few logic issues with this claim, but the big one would he was in the latest Wonka movie. Also, Miley Cyrus wasn't in any project with him. Yeah, the fact that they're using that Miley Cyrus connection, I mean, I don't automatically place Rowan Atkinson and Miley Cyrus together at all. I don't really know how they would potentially know each other.
No.
That's a baffling one. You know, she's obviously a very famous American singer, and he's a British actor, a 60-plus British actor. I don't really know, unless that she, you know, appeared in some sort of new Mr. Bean movie that's not even happened. So I honestly don't know how they would even make that connection. But again, it's quite fascinating. But a lot of people just don't really buy into it. Somebody did comment, though, yes, I do remember this. My girlfriend said I was crazy. I do remember a report or something saying he died, and magically it's like it never happened. So what I'm going to chalk that down to is probably a hoax. There was a spate on social media of celebrity death hoaxes at one time or another. It's not cool, it's not funny. I'll never forget the Morgan Freeman one, and I was really upset, and to find out that he was still alive, obviously I was relieved, but I thought, how can someone be so sick to post something like that and not consider these people are real people, not just public figures?
Yeah, definitely. So whoever put out the Morgan Freeman hoax, fuck you, that was not cool. You don't go around saying that Morgan Freeman's died. As to the Rowan Atkinson one, I think the Paul Rubens comparison is plausible because, I mean, they don't exactly look the same, but they do have that kind of image with Pee Wee Herman and Mr. Bean and some of the physical comedy. So if it was Paul Rubens, then I would guess that that is a fairly plausible explanation. But for them to say it wasn't Paul Rubens, it was Rowan Atkinson, that just seems really odd. And I definitely want to see the Miley Cyrus Rowan Atkinson movie whenever that comes out, because that is just one of the weirdest combinations of people, especially to pay tribute to Rowan Atkinson with the bulk of the stuff he's done. You know, like all the comedy stuff he's done in the UK. When they're asking people to give a moving tribute to him. So it's like nobody who was in Blackadder, nobody who was in Not the 9 o'clock News, nobody who was in any of the Mr. Bean movies. No, we'll get Miley Cyrus to talk about Rowan Atkinson's death. I mean, that is completely and utterly random. I'm kind of hoping that they get Miley Cyrus on to talk about everybody's death in terms of celebdom. So when anybody who is quite well known does pass away, then they immediately throw over to Miley Cyrus and say, "Okay, Miley, what do you think about this celebrity who has just died?" I would pay to have a channel, the Miley Cyrus tribute channel, where Miley gives very extensive and glowing eulogies to celebrities who have just passed away.
Yeah, and maybe there is this Hannah Montana Mr. Bean crossover that we're all looking for. And there's also a second celebrity death that baffled us, but unfortunately, I think the post has been deleted and disappeared. But just to shake things up, I am telling you, and Darren, I hope you can vouch for me because I know I sent this to you because you would have been like, what the fuck?
You did, yeah.
But people were claiming that Kylie Minogue passed away. Where did that come from? I mean, the only things that I think people did respond with was that they could be confusing Olivia Newton-John with Kylie Minogue because obviously famous Australian actresses, singers, there's that element of it. But again, that was just a very strange one. I just sometimes feel that people just writing things for the sake of it on Reddit.
Yeah, that one probably was just somebody deciding that they'd got too much time on their hands. Who can I have killed off? Or Kylie Minogue? I mean, arguably, you can say that Kylie Minogue's acting career was killed off with Street Fighter, but Kylie Minogue, as a singer, is very much alive and well and still producing music to this day. It's just a weird one. Yeah, the Olivia Newton-John, yeah, you've got Aussie singers, Aussie actresses. Not quite the same era, but yeah. If I'm going to be very kind, I think you can possibly mistake Olivia Newton-John and Kylie Minogue because of the Aussie singer thing. But I think the fact that it has been deleted, I think somebody was just taking the piss on that one, I have to say. The Rowan Atkinson one, it has some, well, I won't say some weight behind it, but it does have a story behind it. But for somebody to just pluck this out of the air saying, yeah, Kylie Minogue's passed away, there's no substance to it because there's nothing that you can hang it on. There's nothing that's happened in the last 6-12 months that would actually give it any sort of grounding that Kylie had passed away. I mean, she's not ubiquitous, I don't think, but she's in the public eye enough to immediately debunk that story. I don't know why it was suddenly Kylie Minogue's turn to get put into the who's dead in the celebrity world spotlight. I hope we're not going to get another round of the Morgan Freeman thing again and all these other celebrities. It's like, you'll never guess who's dead. It's like, well, I won't ever guess because they haven't. It's another bloody Twitter hoax.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, again, the only thing that I can think of recently with Kylie Minogue is she made a cameo on Neighbours when they were ending the show. That's probably the most recent memory of her that comes to mind, and that's probably the most recent, highly publicised information about her. But interestingly, when I was trying to search for this post, which has now disappeared, but I didn't make it up, I've come across this very recent post from 7 hours ago, and this was just me typing in Kylie Minogue to the Mandela Effect on Reddit. James Cameron's Titanic 2, 2019. I need to give this bonus one now. I knew that Titanic 2 was released in 2019 and directed by Cameron. It was a commercial failure. Everyone was talking about it before the premiere. Everyone stopped after like a few weeks. What the fuck, brain? It stopped me being so dumb. I just only realised it was from a meme. Potential answer, a fan-made trailer warned my dreams. After a while, I started believing a memory falsified in my brain. Yeah, so that one's quite interesting that they've posted that and realised that that never happened.
That's fair. I mean, at least they've fessed up to it and said, yeah, it didn't happen. Titanic 2, a sequel to a historical event. I mean, what's going to happen in Titanic 2? What, are they going to resurrect the boat? Or are they going to just send it back out? Or say, oh, by the way, the stuff in the first movie was a dream. For starters, it's the most tasteless idea for a sequel. You know, is DiCaprio going to come back as a zombie after being drowned at the end of it? Sorry, spoiler alert, but you should have seen Titanic by now. At the end of Titanic, Kate Winslet is on a door that's quite big enough for the two of them, but she still lets him die in freezing cold water. But yeah, Titanic 2. I'm sure James Cameron's got more than enough on his plate with the Avatar movies to be thinking about a sequel to Titanic, even if he thought of one. But why would you think, well, I've already done a fictionalisation of this movie, but can we bring this back somehow? Can we have another Titanic? Can we make it into a franchise? Having said that, there's those Italian animation movies set on the Titanic. There's like a million of those, and they're all set on the Titanic, and there's all sorts of different stories going on there. So maybe
like a rapping dog.
The Rapping Dog. We are going to cover that movie on this podcast at one point. Because
one day, people.
Yeah, one day we're going to do that. But for now, Titanic 2, it's a concept. And I'm sure that somebody out there has thought of it as a potential sequel idea. But in one of the biggest maritime disasters in history, I think you probably ought to leave it alone.
So before we get into our final Mandela effect, there is a post that I feel I need to read that it might shed some light on people who are immune to the Mandela effect and some people who aren't. So this post is by a user who says, "My dad is immune to Mandela effects. He hardly knew what it was before I asked him about it today. It's like the Luke, I am your father thing, right?" was his explanation of it. So he certainly hasn't heard of any of these before. He said, Rod Serling hosted The Twilight Zone, not Rod Sterling. I asked him what the last line of We Are the Champions was, and he said, We Are the Champions. I asked him about the mystery of Mona Lisa's identity, and he said, I've spent too much time online, and we've always known who Mona Lisa was. My dad does have a level of power in this world. I can't tell if this isn't my original dad or if he's in on it. Honestly, I was too afraid to ask him to describe the Fruit of the Loom logo, as I don't really want to be convinced that my dad is from another dimension or some shit. Edit. I don't know how I messed up this post so badly before editing.
I've got to say that the term original dad deserves some sort of award.
100%. I mean, just the idea that we are different versions of ourselves somewhere between 2012 and now. We have basically gone into a different realm, and the people we were pre-2012 are not the people we are now. And we're a second version of ourselves. It's all very science fiction, and I'm here for it.
I blame Marvel. I totally blame Marvel for this, with the snap in the Infinity War movies and also the multiverse. It's totally the MCU's fault now, because everybody thinks everything is existing on multiple planes and we're all different versions of ourselves in different versions of the universe. Which I can quite buy into. I'm all for alternate timelines. But when it bleeds into that sort of stuff and you're getting some guy talking about whether his dad is his original dad or not, I think we're through the looking glass here. I think we need to take a step back, take a breather, and get some perspective on things.
Absolutely. So this brings us to our final segment of this podcast, which is Everyone is Still Being Shazammed. Okay, forgive us. It's been 2 years since we did a deep dive on this, because it is just the most baffling, fascinating Mandela effect I've ever come across. And I still love reading posts about it. I'm not going to deny that. If I see a post come about Shazam, I'm like, oh, what's being said on it now? It's still going. People are adamant this film existed. So this is a very recent post from a couple of days ago. The only one I really can't get my head around. I'm 38 years old and none of the big examples really resonate with me or strike me as particularly strange, except fucking Shazam. I've only been on Reddit for a year and I'm old enough that the internet wasn't a huge part of my upbringing, so I know it's not just something I saw referenced somewhere. I distinctly remember seeing the commercial in the mid-90s and it's just a memory that always stayed with me. In fact, the only reason I know it apparently didn't exist is because of this subreddit. It's just crazy to me that a memory I've had most of my life that is apparently shared by tons of other people is just wrong. What am I supposed to do with that?
Well, what they could do is go back and listen to our episode, see if that makes any sense of it. But what are you supposed to do with that? And it's just weird that this thing has still got legs. It's going on, and it still goes on to this day. It's been going for what seems like ever now. And when you think it's going to vanish, it comes back. It's like the Michael Myers of Mandela effects, this one. Just when you think you've killed it off, it gets back up and returns to cause more mayhem and havoc. But I am actually here for it. I think the Shazam stuff has now come back on itself, and it's so ludicrous. It's great. I do like the Shazam stuff. The wackier, the better. I mean, I know that some people have jumped on the bandwagon a little bit and have corrupted it slightly by posting things that are clearly not true. But there are still so many people that think the movie exists. So I'm not going to say that it doesn't exist, because at some point, it might just show up, but it's highly unlikely, I've got to say. We've seen the movie that has got Shaq in it. We have not seen the movie that's got Sinbad in it. But there's lots and lots of connections you can make incorrectly for you to be led down the path that there is this alternate genie movie with Sinbad in it. And I can't sit here and disprove the claims of people, because they're not going to sit and listen to me saying there's a perfectly logical explanation to all of this, because in this world, logic doesn't exist. There's loads and loads of alternate explanations as to why there's been some sort of deep state conspiracy that is preventing us from seeing Shazam. Go figure.
I keep thinking about it, and I'm trying to put a logical spin on it, and the only thing that comes to mind is I blame the popularity of Aladdin at the time, and just the fact that the idea of a genie was in the forefront of our minds, and Kazam coming out, and Sinbad appearing in several family movies. As I say, I don't think it's affected people in the UK as much as the US, so again, I'm probably not the best person to speak to, because when I came across this Mandela effect and asked my friends who were all similar age group to me, none of them had heard of it. So it's definitely something that us in the UK have been quite immune to. But this post is quite interesting, and it's basically titled Quick and Easy Debunk of the Supposed Shazam Movie. It's under the section Potential Solutions, so hopefully we'll get somewhere. If something is truly a residual memory shared by many people of an event that truly happened to you in some way, then you will all share the same memory of it. When you see posts about Shazam, you will of course see everyone misremember a movie about Sinbad, a genie, and some kids. However, everyone will have a totally different memory of the kids, or not remember them at all. No fake covers will ever show them, and no descriptions will go into detail, such as how many kids there were, what gender they were, what their relationship was, what their personalities are like, how they interact with Shazam, etc. If people are asked, they will either say their memory is fuzzy and vague, or everyone will remember it differently. Different number of kids, different genders and appearances, different relationships. It's easy to Photoshop in Sinbad or think of him. He's a once popular and easy to find public figure. But the kids, much harder to fake them and be specific, because it would have to be real kids who were real actors at the time, and no one will ever agree with who they were. What were their names? What actors played them? Were they siblings or friends, boys or girls? Everyone will remember this differently because there is no consensus in the cultural imagination. They aren't part of the mass misremembering because the mass misremembering is very simple and vague. Sinbad is a genie, and it would be tricky to claim the kids with the names and identities were in it when they weren't, or to Photoshop them in. Edit to add, and if someone did Photoshop them in or describe them, it would mismatch and disagree with everyone else's memories, which are non-existent / different. This is a quick and simple way to know that Shazam Mandela effect is just a simple misremembering caused by cultural influences, which is really interesting. Psychology and culture are interesting and in of themselves, and the fact that so many people misremember a Shazam movie is fascinating and fun. But it's not real, never existing, and does not come from another time. And I agree with that. It's fascinating and fun, definitely, to hear people's theories. But yeah, again, we discussed this last time that people are naming like Jonathan Taylor Thomas, Mara Wilson, and it's again all these very recognisable child actors that were really popular at the time and that we were seeing a lot of in various popular movies. And then there's the suggestion of Brian Bonzel and Katie Boulding. There's just always different names, Jonathan Brandis. So it all comes up, but it's like, how can you not be consistent on who these kid actors were when you're adamant it's Sinbad in the titular role?
That's where it falls down. They're right, because the generic memory of it is it's Sinbad playing a genie. Now, that's a very simple thing to remember. It's Sinbad playing a genie. But when you get into the detail of the movie, that's where it starts coming apart. And this person is absolutely correct that if you're misremembering the detail of the plot to the point where you don't know who was playing the kids, you don't know how many kids they were, you don't know whether they were related, you don't know what the kids were doing within the plot, you don't really know where the story went, that's where it starts to lose its credibility, if it had any credibility in the first place. Because how can people have such different memories of the actual story? Everybody remembers the Sinbad as the genie bit. It's easy to remember that. It's basically saying, oh, who was the lead in a movie? Yeah, you can remember the lead in a movie, but if you've got an existing movie, say, like, for instance, you know, let's take Saltburn as an example, because it's a recent movie. A lot of people have seen Saltburn. Now, people will remember the same bits of Saltburn. They might have slightly fuzzy memories about how they got there and what happens in certain sequences, but there are certain bits of Saltburn, and I think we know which bits that we are going to talk about. There are certain bits in that movie that pretty much everybody is going to remember that plot detail without fail. The rest of it, yeah, you're going to get a little bit of wiggle room. But for people to not know the nuts and bolts of the plot of Shazam, that's where it starts to come apart. And it is fun to discuss. I mean, there's no harm done in this, but the interesting thing is that if you're, I mean, I'm not saying you're throwing it back in people's faces, you're trying to give them a reasoned explanation. But at the same time, reasoned explanations don't seem to fly, because pointing something out like this, saying, well, you remember the concept, but you don't remember any of the detail, you'll just get somebody coming back and saying, no, but it does exist. So to a certain extent, you're basically talking to a closed door. And I think this one will just keep having legs, because people are so convinced that this movie exists that any sort of explanation, regardless of how well-reasoned it is, people are not going to accept it.
Absolutely. And funny you should mention Saltburn, because I read something that you could easily put in the Mandela Effect branch with it. Somebody posted on the Saltburn subreddit that they thought Felix takes Venetia into the maze to have sex when it's just a random girl from college. Like, somebody is adamant that it's his own sister that he's having sex with in the maze. And people are trying to read into this implied incest in the plot, which I think is people reading too far into it. I mean, maybe Emerald Fennell has drip-fed a little bit of suggestion to imply it in a very loose way, but people are taking that on board, they're honing in on that. But I found that really interesting that someone just thought, oh, he was having sex with his sister in that mix. It's like, no, that doesn't happen.
No. Is every generic posh girl going to be Venetia in that movie? No. I mean, you have got certain characterisation in that movie. And it's a weird misremembering, that one. I'm not saying that it says something in particular about the person who misremembered it, about how they may have wanted the plot to go, but it's definitely not Venetia. But yeah, even the most recent movies are going to have misrememberings about it. And I get that with Saltburn, because it's a part of the plot, but it isn't a main part of the plot. And it's not kind of one of those bits of the movie that you will really remember. There are other things in that movie that will stick in your mind. For instance, the bathwater and the murder on the dance floor bit at the end. They're the sequences that will really stick there. The other stuff, it may do, it may not. But there are certain events in Saltburn which pretty much 95-99% of the audience are going to... If you mention Saltburn to somebody, they're going to go... bathwater, bit at the end. But it is weird that the Mandela Effect is alive and well and in movies that have only just come out.
Absolutely, and I have a feeling Saltburn's going to blow up with Mandela Effects at some point, if it's not already starting to. I think because it's a movie everyone's seen so recently and revisited and rewatched, and I think people are going to claim they've seen different things at different times because it is so multi-layered and you can read it in so many different ways. So I'm here for it, and I will definitely bring the updates when I can about any Saltburn Mandela Effects or any other weird and wonderful Mandela Effects for that matter. So I hope you've enjoyed this episode where we've gone on a bit of a tangent and a different kind of style of episode going back on these Mandela Effects. And just let us know what you think, and if any, as I say, it personally affected you, or if there are any Mandela Effects you'd like us to talk about when we probably dig this up again in future episodes.
Yeah, I'm sure we'll be coming back to this. Maybe in another 50, we'll come back to this and say, hey, you remember when we did this 50 episodes ago? Maybe return to the return of the Mandela Effect.
Yeah, maybe it'll be a new tradition. Every 50 episodes, the Mandelas come out.
I do wish we could chat longer.
And that's it for episode 130 of the HD Movie Podcast. As always, thank you for listening.
And if you enjoy our content, feel free to follow us on social media. We are on X and Instagram at HD Movie Podcast.
So for episode 131, we were thinking about what to cover, but something cropped up within the cornucopia of Mandela Effects, and we thought, you know what, we've mentioned it, why don't we cover it?
So we are going to look at the film The Babysitter, starring Alicia Silverstone. Not Fear, starring Alicia Silverstone. We're actually going to go for the 90s movie that she actually did appear in and wasn't digitally edited out of a different film. So that makes any sense. But we're doing The Babysitter, basically, and it's available to rent or buy on Amazon Prime.
So until then, stay safe, everybody, and we'll see you soon. The HD Movie Podcast is presented by Hayley Ellis-Roberts and Darren Gaskell. Its music is written and performed by Mitch Bay. You can find the episodes on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Samsung Podcasts, Amazon Music, Podchaser, TuneIn, iHeartRadio, Player FM, Listen Notes, and Podbean.